Happy Thursday, Jets Thursday, ASJ, Josh McCown, Homecoming Thursday on the Ira Kaufman Podcast, starring the sage of Tampa Bay sports, Mr. Ira Kaufman. I'm Steve Isbitz, hosting here with Lee DeCamper. We're JoeBucksFan.com, and of course, Ira's voice is unmistakable, and his podcast and all his work on JoeBucksFan.com is presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. Ira, it's holiday time. It's here. Holiday time is here. Holiday time is zero downtime at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa. Lease a 2018 CTS for just $399 a month with zero down. Yes, a CTS, $399, zero down. Now's your last chance to get these clearance prices. Rush to Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, just west of 275 on Fletcher, or visit EdMorseCadillacTampa.com. This offer expires the end of the month. The dealer has all the details. Go to EdMorseCadillacTampa.com. Ira, as we always say, the offers do end.
Those prices are outrageous, Steve. Absolutely outrageous. I think I'm paying more for my little AMC Gremlin from 1984. My monthly stipend is still more than that.
He's still paying off Vinny from the lot, right?
You know, look, holidays are coming up, Steve. Holiday savings. And all the 2018s are in, so the inventory of 2017, you get great deals on them.
You have a new career, Ira, selling cars.
Thank you, my friend.
At Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, now you can save on a luxurious Cadillac and get more peace of mind at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon with like-new certified pre-owned Cadillacs right there at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. All of our certified pre-owned Cadillacs are inspected, reconditioned, and warrantied. Right now, get special financing and pay thousands less than new car prices. Visit EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com. And also, Ira, at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, you've waited for the season's best lease offers. You waited for 0%. Don't wait any longer. They have a last chance sale going on at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. A lot of great details. EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com. But also, Ira, the details, that I know it drives you nuts. They're being finalized. It's definite, though. It's a go, 100%. We'll be in Atlanta for your fan retreat. Where the night before, it's going to be 6 o'clock. 6 o'clock at a hotel in Atlanta, possibly a small bar brought to you by Fan Retreat, where you will regale the Bucks fans. You will give a little speech, some Q&A.
Sasquatch may make a return appearance. You never know.
Yeah, you might get direct questions on Sasquatch.
I'm already compiling my best Bucks stories. We'll take questions. And as you know, Steven, we don't cut any corners here. So, you know, by then, the losing streak could be, what, 7 games? And you're talking to the man who said they were about to go on a 5-game winning streak. Something that I reminded Ali Marpet of today in the locker room. How do you like that?
Yeah, we're going to get your juice from the locker room. Of course, we're back at One Buck Palace, where we do our recording on Wednesday. And a lot's been swirling around today for sure. But the details will be at JoeBucksFan.com on the whole fan retreat, brought to you by FanRetreat.com.
This was the event that got wiped out by Hurricane Irma.
Well, it got wiped out. We had more than 200 reservations. It was going to be amazing for the opening day in Miami. And this doesn't replace that. This was sort of planned, but we're nailing it down. And
but, Steve, the difference is the Bucks were 0-0 at that time. There would have been a tremendous amount of expectations. And now they are where they are, Steve.
Yeah, there's sort of a little bit of a loss of energy, if you will, Mr. Kaufman.
We can talk about changes that are coming at One Buck Place. They are common.
Yeah, there'll be a lot to talk about at that fan retreat. And also, anybody who wants to go to the Florida Classic with Fan Retreat, go to JoeBucksFan.com, get all the information there. Florida Blue, Florida Classic, right around the corner, November 18th at, they don't call it the Citrus Bowl anymore, Camping World Stadium.
That'll be a week from this weekend. That's right.
Yeah, absolutely. The great bands and all the fanfare there for that historic game. All right, so Sage, you're here at One Buck. You're in the locker room today. What's your locker room report? You promised us you'd give us the temperature of the room, the juice of the room, if there is any. What do you got?
I told you, it's 61.4 degrees. It's chilly. So here's a couple of my impressions, and Lee was there with me. First, who's not there? Let's start with that.
Oh,
let's start
How
with
long
that.
You got?
McCoy didn't show up. Well, Wednesday's usually McCoy's day to speak. Now, he didn't speak last Wednesday either, but he did talk on Thursday. My sense is McCoy's all talked out. He's all talked out.
What's there to say?
You know, he's always available after a game. He's available during the week in the locker room. He's tired, beaten down, just like most Bucks. Now, he's been there since 2010. He's more beaten down than most, except for DeMar Dotson. And I don't believe Dotson was a starter till like 2011, so in terms of starting material, McCoy is the number one guy in terms of tenure. He's tired. I mean, you know, even 2010, he didn't play at the end of that glorious season. He got hurt in December, so he wasn't even part of that late run, you know. So look, he had big expectations this year. He's battered physically. I think it's more of a mental thing with McCoy at this point. Who else wasn't there, gentlemen?
Doug Martin.
DeSean Jackson, who has made it a habit to avoid the Wednesday locker room. I don't know what's going on with DeSean Jackson, but you can only imagine his frustrations. Steve, he didn't sign up for this. He didn't sign up for a 2-6 team. Lee, he did not sign up to play with a quarterback who can't hit him on a deep pass. Can't do it. The Bucs' lack of explosive plays in the wake of what happened last season and the offseason additions is extraordinary. I dug up a little original research, Lee, and you saw it. They have two 20-yard runs this season, halfway through the year. 2015, Cutter's the offensive coordinator. You got Doug Martin. You got Sims. They led the league with 20. 20 runs of at least 20 yards. This year, they're on pace for 4. The deep pass has not been there. So no DeSean Jackson in the locker room. You mentioned Doug Martin.
No Evans, no Vernon Hargraves.
No Evans.
No Clinton McDonald. I mean, half the team wasn't in there.
I got a question for you, Ira, because look, we're talking.
Evan Smith was holding court, Mr. Isbitz. Well, is that all you need to know about a Wednesday?
I got a question for you. We got fans listening. You got thousands of your devoted listeners on Google Play, iTunes, Podbean, Joe Bucks fan, wherever. They want to know, who cares who's in the locker room on a Wednesday, Ira? How does that affect me, the fan, or the team, or why is that important?
Because it's an indication they're beaten down. They're a beaten down football team. Now, Lee and I said it last week, Isbitz, and if you'd come to the Wednesday locker room, you might talk about it a little bit too, Isbitz, the next time you show up before 1 o'clock on a Wednesday. But me and DeKemper, we're in there bright and early, and we said a week ago, there's no juice coming out of this locker room heading into the New Orleans game. And you know what, Lee? In the wake of the Saints game, even Sunday night, it didn't take long, we had a few listeners get on the website and say, boy, when I heard you and DeKemper talking about the locker room and there's no energy in there, we knew we had no chance in New Orleans.
Wow.
And turned out we were right. We didn't want to be right.
No, we want to be dead wrong,
and
obviously.
Steve, as far as today, there's certainly not more juice, and there might be less juice.
Well, there's something I noticed today, and this goes along the lines, and before anybody says this, I'm not making this a media issue in any way, shape, or form. No way is this a media issue, but no Donovan Smith music. But that's probably because he wasn't in the locker room.
He wasn't in the locker room.
And the reason why I bring that up, you know, you hear a lot of players. Jameis, I got to be fair about Jameis. I love Jameis' death, but, you know, I got to be fair. Jameis is one of these guys that beats his chest, I'm a leader. Okay, fine. This year, since Godster Chairless left, and I know Godster Chairless was swinging saloon doors of a blocker, but the offensive linemen worshipped him because he really controlled that offensive line room. I had offensive linemen tell me how he would give them tests. He goes, here's a question I want you to answer. You don't have to answer me now. You go home and you think about it, and it's about how to play the game, how to do your job, things like that. And while those kind of guys are invaluable, and I think we're starting to see some of that way this locker room – Cutter's lost the locker room. It's pretty obvious right now. At any rate, Donovan Smith, and it just started this year, cranks up the music. Okay, they're not supposed to do that during media availability because, among other reasons, Buccaneers.com can't shoot video when the music's blaring. You can't hear a guy. So I remember one time, one of the Bucs media relations guys told Donovan Smith to turn it down. He wouldn't turn it down. I'm not saying they got into an argument, but there was about a two-minute, three-minute discussion going back and forth, no histrionics, no yelling. You know, Bucs officials tell him you had to keep the music down because the people are trying to do their jobs here, including Buccaneers.com. He wouldn't do it. And I guess after a while, he finally succumbed, and it only lasted briefly. And he's the only one who does that. You know, everybody else, no music because it's, you know, media availability, Buccaneers.com availability. To me, that speaks not only, you know, Chairless would tell him to shut it down, but where is your so-called leader? You pick a name. I don't give a
hoot. That's an outstanding point, DeKemper.
You pick any player. Any player wants to be a leader. You pick the name. Fill in the blank. Why doesn't this guy, if he's such a leader, go up to Donovan Smith and say, hey, Jay-Z, I can't play music. Jameis can't play music. Mike Evans can't play music. Brent Grimes can't play music. Why the hell are you so special? Can't you live 40 minutes without music?
Steve, if you ask me right now to pick a leader along the offensive line, and we'll talk later about foibles of the offensive line.
Foibles.
Foibles. Steve, if you ask me to pick the leader of the offensive line, I can't give you a direct answer. I mean, longest tenured guy, DeMar Dotson. He's quiet.
Yeah.
He doesn't have that kind of personality. Marpet, well, he's not doing enough on the field to have that kind of voice. Sweezy just got there. Donovan Smith's had his problems. And Panfield's splitting time with Evan Smith. I don't know who the head of that unit is.
interesting way to look at it. I will clarify a little bit for the folks. When there is music on in the background, or certain media outlets, Buccaneers, NFL.com, whatever included, ESPN, that will adhere to copyright laws. So if they're showing an interview and there's pick an artist pumping in the background, they can't do that because they don't have the rights.
Barry Manilow.
They don't have
Barry
right, exactly. Yeah, Bette Midler, whatever it might be. Yeah. They don't have the rights. ESPN doesn't have the rights to play that music, which is just happens to be in the background. So
even though it's just background,
and that's come up before, and that's part of it. So it's not just we don't like the noise kind of thing. That's part of that.
There's no energy in the locker room.
And like I said, Donovan Smith, he never turns, even when he's told to. That speaks volumes.
So Ira, look, the leader of the offensive line, we were all told by everybody, including the offensive linemen themselves, that Sweezy was a guy who was going to rub off, that his
going to bring the nasty,
his edge and his demeanor and his nastiness was going to rub off. And we didn't hear the word leader with Sweezy, but we heard that, hey, this is how this guy plays and everyone's going to sort of march to that beat. We're not seeing
it
that.
It hasn't happened.
So, yeah, I'd agree with that. I don't know who the leader of the O-line is myself.
Make a note of that, DeKemper. On this date, November 8th, 2017,
who's the leader?
Izbitz agrees with a point made by the sage.
Well, that's because I don't see any pen. He doesn't have a pen.
He doesn't have a pen.
That's
yeah,
why.
Give him a pen and he's writing stuff. All right, down.
I'm the one who calls you the sage. Of course, I agree with most.
And now I'm going to bore a little. I'm going to drill a little deeper on the offensive.
I like the word
line.
Bore better. The I'm verb. That's bore. A good verb.
Tell me where I'm wrong, Lee. There's no aggression up front. There's no push, and I'm not going to make an excuse for your man Doug Martin, who you saw have passionately defended on this podcast. Mm-hmm. Over these many years. There's no push, Lee. Now, I was telling Izbitz before the podcast, and I'm going to lay it on you. To me, a perfect example of how passive this offensive line has been. And don't forget, Cutter came out Monday and said there's too many clean hitters. That means guys that are unblocked, clean hitters. Mm-hmm. He's not talking about Buck defense. He's talking about the other team's defense. And so, Lee, tell me if I'm wrong here, but we saw Barber. And I'm watching Barber, and almost virtually every carry, he's breaking two tackles. He's dodging this guy. He's running hard. When the sheet comes out, he's got 31 yards, you know, and averaging less than 4 yards a carry. I was shocked because I thought he'd have 50 or 60, average 4.2, 4.4. It didn't happen. To me, that is a graphic example of how hard Barber had to work to get what the heck he got, which wasn't very impressive. When you look at the sheer numbers, it's
not
impressive.
Better, he was getting better results than other people. So,
and he was getting better results than other people. I guess my point is, guys, this running game was so dynamic when Cutter was the offensive coordinator under Lovie Smith. Mm-hmm. And you've heard me mention it. I'll keep mentioning it. Besides an all-pro back in Martin, Sims was very efficient, astonishingly efficient, based on his touches and his production. Over 1,000 yards from scrimmage, backing up an all-pro back. That never happens. Backing up an all-pro back, you get 1,000 yards from scrimmage. Marvelous production. And now, starting last year, this is not a new phenomenon. They didn't run the ball very well last year. Martin hurt. Martin suspended. Martin inefficient. You know, Rodgers did what Rodgers could do, but he's a backup. Sims was terrible last year. This is not a new problem here, Lee. This is now 2 years since Cutter ascended to the head coaching. You can say all the coincidence you want, but the fact is they haven't run worth a damn with Dirk Cutter as the head coach. What is the problem?
Well, I was going to ask you about that, to your point. I'm going to go even – I want to bore a little further, to use your word.
I've written 4 pages of notes, by the way, Ira. Go ahead.
You're not getting the microphone, Izbitz. This is the DeKemper Kaufman show.
Well, obviously, you know, Doug Martin is not the same running back. And go look at the Pro Bowl roster 2015. You'll see quite a few guys that are out of football right now. Darrelle Revis, Tony Romo, a couple of names spring to mind. When Cutter only had to focus on offense.
He called a better game.
A lot of things. Well, he got better results,
period. And
they
gained 4 yards, Steve. Those are the facts.
So do you think that the Bucs are suffering because, as a head coach, he's got a lot of fish to fry. Whereas an offensive coordinator, he had razor focus, just one element.
I think that is a point that can legitimately be made. Cutter would not be the first guy that ever moved from coordinator to head coach, and the unit that he, you know, oversaw suffered as a result. He wouldn't be the first. But the facts are the facts. This offense is not as good as it was in 2015, Steve, and may I add, with better talent than they had in 2015.
To follow up on that, if Cutter stays, You know, I don't want to see anybody leave, but at 2-6, that's a very real possibility.
Well, I think barring a Raheem Morris-like collapse, mm-hmm. I think he should stay.
Well, given the fact he's lost the team. And well, that's pretty obvious.
That's a strong statement.
Well, I'll say this, Ira. I've talked to too many players on the record that are telling me guys don't want to win, guys aren't preparing. That's damning. That's what I've thought on the record. Off the record, I've gotten even more. That's more alarming. He's lost his team. I mean, even Brian Billick all but said it. You know, Steve had it this morning, Wednesday morning, on JoeBucksFan.com, what Brian Billick was talking about. The best thing the Glazers could do is, like, Dirk Cutter is returning 2018. Then Cutter tells the players, okay, SOBs, you either follow me or you're out of here. It's your choice. I know that's not the Glazers' MO, so to speak. But
is Bits, are you willing to go to the extent to say he has lost this team?
No. I mean, the evidence, there's a lot of evidence that supports that. I mean, just from watching what we're seeing.
Yeah, just
on
look
the
at
field.
What's on the field. But, and that's not counting the players, what the players are talking about.
No, I don't think he has on a grand scale, on a Raheem Morris 2011 December scale. No.
Justify that claim that Cutter might have lost this football
team. Well, first off, I've got Connie on the record saying, you know, some guys aren't trying, some guys aren't preparing. Well, why are you not preparing? That tells me they've tuned out the coaches.
Keep going.
Doug Martin said the same thing to me after the game Sunday night. He said, guys don't want to win. What do you mean they don't want to win? Doesn't that sound like he's lost the players?
Cutter has also suggested himself, Lee, I believe as late as Monday, suggested that the effort is not always there as much as it should be.
And that's another example. This is what I was told in New Orleans. Now, this guy is not a credentialed member of the media. I trust him. I know him. I can't verify this.
Okay.
He had told me he was in New Orleans. He was celebrating his anniversary with his wife, and it just so happened to coincide with the Bucks game, so he went to the Bucks game. He happened to be sitting with a player's family. I'm not going to mention a player's name because I can't verify this, but the player's family told him two things. One, this guy is upset with how he's being used. And I've not heard this, the player in question, I've never heard his name come up. We heard T.J. Ward, McCoy's groused of sap. Swaggy Baker. So this is a brand new one. This is player number four that I've heard complaining about how he's being used. And he apparently told his family the gist of the team is they don't expect Cutter back.
Well, Steve, that's where the final eight games do come in.
Sure. Yeah, eight games to go. I just look at it as it wouldn't shock me to no end if Ryan Fitzpatrick sort of settles the team down a little bit and they beat the Jets, which aren't that great of a team. I don't expect them to win. We'll get to our predictions later. But if they beat the Jets, you know, maybe they calm down a little bit and things right themselves a little bit. You know, whereas like a Raheem, when I think of lost the team, I mean like lost and you can't get it back. That's my interpretation of lost. I don't know. Is that what you mean by lost?
My idea of lost is the players have tuned out the message, whatever the message may be. They're freelancing.
Guys, in the big picture of things, and you know, we're going to talk a lot more about this in the next 2 months, but in the big picture, do you want to fire a guy who just had one bad year? His first year was better than expected. He has one bad year, whether it's 6-10 or 3-13. It's one season, and you then want to make a change. So that begs the question: next year, if you get rid of him, is the next guy going to be under heat from having a bad month?
Well, here's a question:
is that the reputation the Glazers really want around this league? And it might hurt him in terms of getting the next coach.
That's true. Here's a big caveat that I think the game has changed today. We're recording this Wednesday early afternoon. I think the game has changed a bit—not football game, but the drama about Light and Cutter, Mike Smith maybe, who's going to return, who's not. I think it's changed today. If we were sitting here before the season and one of us asked, hypothetically, if Jameis breaks a leg in the third game, can't play, and the season
there's your get-out-of-jail-free card.
Well, we're talking about James Andrews. You know, the team's trying to put a good face on it. It's just a consultation. They're working with us. Jameis said, I see him all the time. Baloney. You don't go to a guy like James Andrews to talk about your college football teams.
Steve, the difference in what Lee's intimating is they were lousy before. They were lousy before Winston ever got hurt. That's the other part of the equation.
I think the last part of the equation is eight games to go. That's a lot of time. You know, and we'll
with
know.
With a backup quarterback?
We'll know. Well, we'll know if they quit.
If they quit, we'll know.
The quit is the referendum on the coach. And if they quit, doesn't matter who's out there, he's not coming back.
The Glazers, guys, I think you'd agree with me, even Isbitz. In a perfect world, the Glazers didn't want to fire Raheem Morris in 2011.
I don't think
he just had a marvelous 2010 season.
Sure.
He gave the Glazers a lot of pleasure and a lot of joy in 2010. They said it was the most fun they've had since the Super Bowl. And in some ways, based on expectations going into 2010, it was even more astonishing than 2002.
The race for 10.
And so they don't want to fire him a year later, but, Steve, they felt they had no choice by the end of that year with the 10-game losing streak, and players quit. Nobody wants to hear that, but they quit.
Everybody's job, I think the easiest way to say it, is still on the line and in the balance. You know, and a lot of that, it's all going to come down to the last eight games. I don't think that if Jameis doesn't play the rest of this season and the Bucs lose out, I don't think that saves anybody. I really don't.
I agree with that.
Jay, they picked a backup quarterback, right? Your backup quarterback's supposed to be able to win one out of three. You know, one out of three is reasonable. Two or three games out of eight. Otherwise, you pick the wrong backup.
That's right.
And that's another knock on Cutter and Light if Ryan Fitzpatrick is brutal.
Yeah, when I say, just to emphasize, when I say lost team out, I'm not talking about quitting. I'm just like, they tuned out the message.
Hey,
let's go back to the offensive line, because I've got 5 pages of notes now and all this stuff. All right, look, the Bucs, Ira, we've discussed this all offseason, too. Right now, the Bucs are averaging 3.7 yards a carry. NFL average is 4.1.
And 4.8 in 2015, Mr. Risby.
It's fallen off decisively. Okay, now, in 2015, what did they have? They had an all-pro running back. In 2016, the same guy was garbage. And in 2017, they brought the same guy back, and he's garbage. So they don't have a running back.
The holes were a lot better, Steven.
The holes were better, but you know how that goes. A great running back can cover up a lot, and it goes in tandem. All I'm saying is right now, Martin's averaging 3.5 yards a carry. That's terrible. And he's dragging down the whole team's average. All the other running backs and the quarterback are averaging more per rush than Doug Martin. He is the problem. And I'm not saying the offensive line is strong, but it's not like they're the worst in the league here. And the Bucs have, I think they looked it up the other day, they've allowed the 12th fewest, they're like ranked 12th in quarterback hits allowed. So they're still pass blocking reasonably well.
I didn't say anything about pass blocking.
And Jameis, obviously, and Fitzpatrick have thrown a ton of passes. So the percentage is even good there, too. They don't have an identity. They don't have a leader, like you said. But I don't think it's as dreadful as we're making it out to be. And I think we're going to see if the Bucs are smart enough to shelve Doug Martin, stop him from playing, and let Peyton Barber roll because there's nothing for Martin to play for. I think we're going to see better production.
Lee, here's where I come in with guns blazing.
Uh-oh.
And by the way, I don't need a pen and paper while Izbitz is doing his drivel over there to counter this. Gentlemen, let us not forget. Charles Sims, I'm going to say it again. Charles Sims averaged 4.9 in 2015, and he didn't carry the ball 11 times that season. 4.9. Same as Doug Martin, 4.9. As a team, the Bucs were 4.8. Sims can't run anymore.
Nope.
He can't run. Can't run. So while you guys are making every excuse in the world for an offensive line that has no physicality, zero. I'm tired of it. You want to pin it all on little number 22, who I'm not going to say has any burst left. I'm not going to say that. But Doug Martin is not the reason the Bucs can't run the football.
Mm.
No, nobody is running the football well on the Buccaneers.
Well,
nobody.
I wrote before, Denver and Seattle have garbage offensive lines, worse than the Bucs. They get better run production. C.J. Anderson, would you take C.J. Anderson as running back? Sure you would, Ira.
Well, I'm going to throw up the Cowboys because if Elliott gets suspended, which he might by the time this podcast goes, Darren McFadden is going to gain yardage.
Yes, he
will.
Offensive line. Which he did before, Elliott.
So when you got a good offensive line, Steve, you can do what you want. When you got a lousy offensive line,
you better have a good running back.
You can't do much.
Well, we're going to find out. But do you think the Bucs take that step, Ira, because we have a game on Sunday here? Do you think they take that step and let Peyton Barber carry the rock and let Doug Martin be the number two?
Yeah, and they're behind the curve because if they listen to this podcast, which some do, at One Buck Place.
Oh, they do.
We have been calling for Peyton Barber
for a
month.
Peyton Barber.
Free him up. He had two carries. Am I correct, Steve? Since week one.
Something like
till
that.
Till Sunday.
Yeah,
two.
Witness protection program.
And he played damn well against the Bears. He didn't do anything wrong against the Bears. Now his protection issues, he's got them.
Yes, and that's legitimate. But
that's
legitimate. As I wrote over the weekend Monday morning about Peyton Barber. You know, because the Bucs have no run game right now, Peyton Barber, they don't like, they're skittish about his pass blocking because they think they can get Jameis hurt. Okay, I get that. I understand that. Legitimate issue. However, when you can't run the ball, defenses are teeing off on Jameis anyway. So to help Jameis out a little bit, or Fitzpatrick, if, you know, since who knows when Jameis returns. You got to have a run game to try to.
They are so unbalanced right now.
Oh, terribly so.
You know, and they were beautifully balanced in 2015.
That's just
beautifully.
What is the defense's goal? Make an offense one dimensional. Well, the Bucs, when they come out after the national anthem, are already one dimensional on offense.
Look, it goes back. We're in this. We're playing circus like the Bucs do with the kicker position. That's what the Bucs do with the kicker position, right? So. Of course, it's easy to be balanced when you got all-pro running back and Doug Martin. The guy was electric in 2015. We don't have that anymore, so we've got garbage.
You're too narrowly focused on Doug Martin. Get out in the world once in a while, Elizabeth. Experience a few things. By the way, look at the Saints. Now, the Saints defense is playing a lot better.
Oh, you mean the team that drafted Alvin Kamara?
But, Steve, now the Saints have a running game like they had when they were winning 11 games. And Breeze is Breeze. He's the same guy. He don't change. And they probably have less weapons on the flanks than they had back then.
Arguably,
when
yes.
They used to have Colston, and they had Jimmy Graham, and Lance Moore was effective. Mm-hmm. And now they got Thomas, who's a good player, but, you know, Ted Ginn, you know, and so and Snead's doing nothing. So anyway, what I'm saying is the Saints are now a multidimensional threat. They have offensive balance. It helps keep the defense off the field. They got 3rd-and-2 instead of 3rd-and-6. It makes a big difference, Lee. And we saw it with the 2015. Even though the Bucs were 6-10 that season, they had a nice offense. They had a record-setting offense for this franchise. And Winston took every snap as a rookie. They had that kind of offense.
All right, Sage, let me take you back to the locker room. Anything else you're seeing in there that's worth
noting? Yeah, I went up to Ali Marpet, gentlemen, by myself, putting his socks on.
That.
And what I said to Marpet, because I like to break the ice with him, he looked up, "What do you want?" But he said it in a funny way. And I said to him, "Punch that wall. Punch that wall right in front of you. Give me something to write about." What I was trying to really say was, get mad. Get freaking mad.
You know what?
And Marpet just looked at me, going, come on. What are you, punch the wall. And then other guys came behind them, the TVs. And I go, "Ollie, you know, you got a group behind you." And he looked behind him and he said, "Tomorrow, gentlemen. Not today. Tomorrow." So now Marpet's not talking on Wednesday.
You barely touched upon something that's glaring.
Go ahead.
Where is any player tossing a helmet across the locker room after a loss?
You know what? There's something to be said for that, Steve. Somebody might say, that's dramatics. That's not going to change a darn thing. You know what? It's indicative. Get mad. Who the heck's mad?
I don't know.
Other than Winston. When
Donald Penn was here, and he got a lot of practice at doing this, unfortunately, we were in the tunnel when the team's coming off the field. Donald Penn was ready to tear someone's head off, just cursing like a drunken sailor on steroids, just wanted to beat somebody up. He was so angry at losing. You don't see that.
You wonder about the room, Steve. You wonder about the chemistry in the room. Some of the people in the room.
Well, I think some of that also comes from the head coach. We don't know, and it doesn't feel like Cutter's ripping these guys a new one.
I wish Cutter would be more pissed off.
Well, that's what I'm saying, right. So a lot of times teams will...
He's trying to show composure.
He is.
Publicly, yes. We don't see what's in a locker room.
We don't know.
We don't know. However, Hard Knocks, he didn't spare any words with Jameis or with Kwan. Remember the time he ripped Kwan? "Don't you look at me like that. And you just cost us the game." And obviously we saw him cuss out Jameis. So, I mean, I see what Steve's saying.
I wish we had some of those NFL film post-game videos.
I understand what Steve's saying. I'm not saying Steve's wrong, but there is some evidence that he will jump on a player. Now, how much, or has he stopped doing that? That's a very good question.
Yeah, we just don't know.
What do you think of Cutter's post-game demeanor, Steve?
We've talked about this. I don't care. I'm the wrong guy to ask. I'm not saying I don't care what you think.
Does he look like he's in shock?
I don't care.
Well, I could say this. The post game last week, you know, he's out of answers. He's at wit's end. And I think he's actually said that before. But what struck me from my point of view when I was at the Superdome, I don't know if this was a network feed or not, but they put this up on the Jumbotron at the Superdome right after the block punt. And Cutter had the look of a guy like saying to himself, "What the hell else can go wrong?
Yeah, what can happen next?"
It was like he was just dumbfounded. And after the game, I was waiting for the elevator to get down to the locker room, and the Bucs defensive coaches filed past me because they have first dibs on the elevator, the coaches do. And Mike Smith obviously is always going to try to break a smile to show he's a human being. But the rest of his assistants, they had the empty stare of the condemned.
as they should. I mean, come on. All right, Ira, let me take you back to Mike Smith, who addressed the media today. And I thought one of the more interesting things there was he was asked about Hargraves and his appearing as the nickelback against the Saints when he played outside corner against the Panthers, yet he Grimes and was still out. And McClain, who came back from a concussion, went outside. Hargraves moved back to nickel, played part-time. And that begs the question, is he now the fourth, considered the number four cornerback on this team? They had a chance to move him back outside last week, and they didn't. What are we getting
there? I think it's a very fluid situation with Hargraves. Lee, I'll say this. If his future is as a slot corner, and he's a good one, I'm not going to knock Jason Light for taking him in the first round because those guys are on the field 70% of the time. Rondé Barber made a nice living.
Is that worth an 11th pick of the draft?
Well, you could argue. Okay. You could argue. But I think what it also tells you, Steve, is they're not sold on him as an outside corner because, as Steve mentioned, no Grimes, and he's not outside.
What happened to Hargraves? I mean, he looked like he was on the cusp of being a reliable starting corner for years, and he's like he's falling off the cliff.
He plays a little scared. He plays a little scared.
Is it a head issue?
I think so. You know, he's supposed to have great ball skills. Well, you got to be around the ball.
Last year he was a ball hawk. Now, he didn't get a lot of picks, but he was around the ball.
I picked him as the breakthrough player this year, Steve. I'm not going to be a hypocrite.
You're having a rough year, Ira.
Yeah, the 5-game winning streak, the breakthrough player.
How about a happier subject?
I also picked Hillary to beat Trump out in the 2016.
Well, happier things. Your fantasy football team, it was undefeated a couple weeks ago.
I have a quick story about that fantasy team, Steve.
Uh-oh.
Nobody's going to believe this, but it's true.
Fantasy.
I was 6-2. And I don't play fantasy football, but Isbitz talked me into it. Showed up at the bar. There's Todd Wright.
With your Ed Morse Cadillac gear.
I got a beet salad and a Riesling, and I'm ready to go. So I was 6-2. I was doing very well. Representing Joe Buck's fan very nicely. And
as always,
here we come into, week 9. And who are my running backs? LeSean McCoy, who I had traded to the Bucks for a second-round pick. He did nothing. He did nothing Sunday. Nothing. My other running back, Leonard Fournette.
Oh.
Who after I activate him, you know, after a bye week, doesn't show up and doesn't play. My running back's got 1 point. 1 point. You can't win like that. You can't win.
But?
My quarterback, Deshaun Watson.
Oh.
Deshaun, well, I kid you not. But I had other guys, so I used Dak Prescott.
Of course,
and he was fine. Okay. So, after Sunday, after the smoke cleared on Sunday, I trailed my man by 11.5 points. I had one guy left. I looked. They give you a percentage of winning. My percentage was 12%. Who did I have? The Detroit Lions kicker. I needed 12 points. He kicks a field goal with 90 seconds left to pad their lead, and I get 12 points. I won by a half a point. That poor sap I was playing against, he must have thrown a sock or something, a shoe at the set. I won by a half a point with Matt Prater scoring 12 points.
Wait,
so I'm living large right now, Steven.
Is that a Brooklyn thing, throwing a sock?
Well,
that
a sock, a fungicide, whatever you want to call it.
A Charlotte Russe.
A Charlotte Russe.
I don't know. I mean, look, actually in the Bucks defense, the way the numbers have been going, partially because they don't force a ton of passing downs because they're getting boat raced all over the place, Hargraves has been playing less than 50% of the snaps. I just think it's telling that they, after 2 weeks of him playing well, and Mike Smith today said he's played well the last couple of weeks, they still won't put him back to outside, and that's why he was drafted. Nobody drafts a nickel number 11 overall.
And they kept up their pace, Lee. Kept up their pace. 8 games, 8 sacks. Isn't that beautiful, Lee? The equation. I wasn't a star Matt student, but that's won a game, Lee. That's won a game. I dare say last week there were 6 guys in the league that had more sack totals than the Bucks as a team. That's probably up to 8 or 9 now. You know, by the end of the year, there might be 20 guys in this league that have more sacks than the Bucks as a team.
Well,
can you imagine?
Last Thursday night when the Jets played, they had 7 sacks, which at the time equaled the Bucks season total.
All right, Ira, Jameis. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, let's talk about Jameis.
Yeah, the quarterback made an appearance today. He's out. Put the news out first on Joe Bucks Fan among the local media that he went to see Dr. James Andrews yesterday.
Hey, don't forget
Tuesday.
Don't forget your little mini scoop earlier in the week, guys, where you said he was going to be shut down for at least two games. Turned out to be right.
That was Jeff Cameron.
Turned out to be right.
Jeff has good sources.
Yeah, Jeff of the Scuttlebucks podcast, which you can
find. Give him some kudos.
Oh, yes.
Some kudos, absolutely.
You can call him up. Call into the show. Hey, kudos for you, young man.
We'll get you on there.
JoeBucksFan.com/podcast. You can find the Scuttlebucks and Jeff Cameron and Tom Lang.
Now, Steve, my comrade, Roy Cummings.
He's no longer your comrade.
Well, I worked with him for so long at the Tribune. He asked legitimately. Talking about Jameis with the, you know, the deep passes or whatever, and you can't connect. And, you know, has the bum shoulder affected your throws? Winston wouldn't answer the question, Lee.
Because he doesn't want to admit it.
He said, I can't say. Oh, well, does that mean he doesn't want to say?
He doesn't want to say.
So, to be fair to Jameis, Steve, here's my interpretation. Tell me if I'm wrong.
You're wrong.
Can start writing now. Write stuff down, Steve. He doesn't want to say, Lee. Because the answer is yes.
Of course.
And when the answer is yes, some fans, some of our readers, some of our listeners are going to say, why is Cutter playing Jameis Winston when he can't make certain throws?
That's a legitimate, fair question.
Mm-hmm. So I think in that Jameis's way, Steve, and I know you'll give a different interpretation.
I think
he's protecting Cutter a little bit.
Oh, and which he is. That's the kind of guy he is. And like I said earlier, you know, when we were referencing Cutter and job security, things of that nature, I thought this changes the game, the Jameis injury of James Andrews. I think this changes the game Jameis has been getting crucified the last couple of days, specifically in national media. Obviously, fans have almost turned on Jameis, no joke. I think that this also changes. I mean, what do you expect the guy with a bum shoulder does? I mean, you want to rip Cutter for playing him? Okay, fine, but If you're going nuts on Jameis because he can't complete passes, well, you go out there and throw something with a bum shoulder and see how accurate you'll be. You won't be.
Steve, you know what we've seen in the last 2 weeks? Give me your take on this. I know you don't need any prompting in this regard. But, Steve, the Winston skeptics have been in a cave for 2 years.
Yes, they have.
They've had nothing to say, gentlemen, because he hasn't basically done one thing wrong off the field, and he was pretty darn productive on the field. They've been silenced. And now, with the pregame antics, the Lattimore incident, and the way he's playing, here they come to the point, Steve, and this is really crazy. I'm sorry, readers. If you're one of the guys I'm talking about, you got a problem. To suggest that the Bucs should draft a quarterback with a top 5 pick in the 2018 draft is just crazy.
Yeah, I've had a guy Twitter me saying
Steve,
they ought to draft Baker Mayfield.
That's just nuts. And I'll tell you why. Because as far as I've learned, ownership has not lost any real significant faith in Jameis Winston. And until that happens, if it does, they're not drafting a quarterback in the first round next year. There's no chance of that. Where am I wrong, Isbitz?
Well, I don't think you're wrong really at all. I mean, Jameis even quipped today, hey, you know, I'm getting all these questions. We had the top-ranked passing offense
in the first 4 weeks.
For a month ago. So, you know, come on. He was sort of defensive on that. The throwing thing and the hurt thing, again, we talked about this before the podcast, Ira. I just think, pretend you're the sage, right? You're on the tennis court doing your thing, and you get your shoulder, you go into it with a rough shoulder or a little tennis elbow, but you're feeling good. You're out there playing because you know you can play. Well, Jameis today was asked about specific throws. Roy Cummings was asking him about some specific throws. It was like detailed throws. And Jameis like, well, I don't know. And it's just like if you miss a shot with your elbow out of 50 shots and somebody says to you, hey, Ira, was that because of your tennis elbow? You're like, well, I don't know.
Right.
It felt pretty good. I lined it up. I hit it. I went wide.
That could happen with 100%.
Right, exactly. So it's a tough thing for Jameis to say. I believe today, frankly, the Buccaneers did not coach Jameis very well. He needed to say, hey, look, guys, came out of the game because I was hurt. How that affected me during the game, I'm not a doctor. I don't know. I felt pretty good when I was in there, and I came out when I felt like crap. That's all we got. I'm hurt. I'm taking a rest.
I re-aggravated it.
I'm out. You know. He wasn't well coached to keep it very simple, which it really is very simple. You know, and the reporters were fishing, well, you know, were you hurt during the game or did it affect you? It's just like, guys, I was out there.
Lee, how much slack are you giving Winston on the season for not doing a very good job with his deep balls, whether it's to Evans or DeSean Jackson, for the entire season, How much are you willing to put that on this injury that happened in Arizona?
Well, as I stated before, I think this, you know, when you factor in James Andrews, you don't go to James Andrews because you have a head cold.
But he wasn't a mad bomber before he went to Arizona either, Lee.
I give Jameis a lot of slack in that for this reason. And fans go nuts. He can't complete the deep ball. Well, why the hell are you calling that play then? I'll use a baseball analogy.
Lee, shouldn't the first pick in overall pick in the draft be able to hit the deep ball?
Let's say you sign a pitcher, you pick a name, to an idiotic contract as a free agent. And you find out he can't throw a curveball all of a sudden, for whatever reason. He can't throw a curveball. Do you force him to throw curveballs in pressure situations?
You hide his weakness.
Thank you. So if Jameis can't hit the DeSean Jackson on deep ball, knock it off. Hit him on intermediary passes where DeSean Jackson can use those wheels of his, those special wheels, to get explosive
but
plays.
But, Lee, what you're not acknowledging, Lee, Steve, tell me if I'm wrong, is that has implications. If you have a quarterback, when he's healthy, that struggles with the deep ball, that's a problem.
Well, you know what this reminds me of? That'd be like someone complaining, and I'm not equating the two quarterbacks in any way, shape, or form. But this would be like someone whining because Joe Montana couldn't rifle a ball. He didn't have that great of an arm. He had a beautifully accurate arm, but not that great of a – he couldn't rifle the ball in there. He couldn't throw 50 yards downfield. And so, to me, that's absolute nitpicking. Okay, it's well-established. He's not hitting DeSean Jackson.
Yeah, never mention those two guys in the same sense.
Well, only because they're only because they're quarterbacks. And to further evidence, another analogy. Doug Martin can't run the ball. So why keep giving him the freaking ball if he can't run the ball? You know, that's the same thing.
I think the broader problem, Ira, through the season, you asked Lee about the scope of the season, is really the core issue with the fans, on top of the, which is sort of the deep ball stuff as a distraction. He's been missing DeSean Jackson on those short throws, leading him.
On time.
Now that I don't give him any slack
for. There were at least three this season where he just, those could have been 50-yard connections.
Throwing behind him.
And that's nothing new. Steve always brings this up, and rightly so. The Rams lost last year. Vincent Jackson wide open, about a 15-yard pass.
When the Rams were the Rams, and they sucked.
Yeah. Jeff Fisher Rams.
Yeah.
And Vincent Jackson's wide open down the right sideline for a touchdown. Jameis overthrows him.
And instead, we're killing Cutter for the play call.
Yeah.
You know, and why aren't you taking
when the
time
game could have been won?
He's also made a lot of good throws, but the deep ball thing is, you know, a question that's probably not going to be answered until next year, unless he really comes back healthy.
How long does it take to get a rhythm with DeSean Jackson?
It's a problem, and you know, we talked about this last time.
He was here since April.
Well, I mean, it was working in training camp. I wasn't in the press conference today. Someone asked about that. I go back to this. I saw with my own eyes Jameis hitting deep balls in college. All of a sudden, he can't hit deep balls.
Some people are suggesting he was not a good deep thrower.
Well, I suggest that if they may want to turn on the tape, it's on YouTube. Go watch his very first college game at Pitt. I was in attendance at that game. I happened to be there just at the right time, right place, when he damn near threw a perfect game. He was throwing deep passes and completing them. So,
were you watching the game, or were you eating a kielbasa over there? In,
No. It's Piemonte. It's not kielbasa.
Piemonte. All right. I'm just
maybe a pierogi, but
Steve, is Jameis Winston a big part of Buck problems going forward?
Going forward,
is he a big issue?
Yes, if he doesn't improve.
You can't even, this is the thing, you can't answer anything going forward right now with Jameis because, one, he's hurt, and two, who knows who the GM, the coach, the offensive coordinator,
but in the words of DeKemper, and I don't think he's wrong, some fans have turned on him.
Yes,
they
have
turned on Winston.
Sure.
They want him out of here.
Yeah, because he's the face of a 2-6 team. That's why.
Here's what I was going to say a little bit earlier. If there is a coaching change, I think Winston's mechanics, whether it was George Whitfield, whether it's Mike Bajakian, I think his mechanics were monkeyed with to make him look like a more polished quarterback, and I think that screwed up his accuracy more than anything. We'll find out if there's new coaching staff, he'll have a new quarterback coach. We'll see then. But I saw him in college. He was an accurate passer. I saw him at games. That Boston College game, where I literally had NFL executives texted me the video of that play. I can't remember who caught it. I want to say Kenny Shaw, where Jameis was racing around in the back of the pocket buying time. He got lit up, and he threw a bomb down the right sideline to Kenny Shaw, hit him right in the numbers and stride for a touchdown. Beautiful play.
I think a lot of it's overblown, Ira. Jameis connecting for 61.5% of his passes this year. What are we looking for here?
It's not going to be Drew Brees.
He's not going to be Drew Brees. It's better than he's been. He's had a heck of a lot more drops than he's had in previous seasons, and he's got a bad shoulder. I mean, what are we you know, what are we talking about? It's the deep balls. It's the home run shots.
The home runs.
And there's quarterbacks in the Hall of Fame that couldn't hit deep balls.
Steve, question for you guys. I'll throw it out open. If at the end of the season the Glazers have their conversation, which they will, with Jameis Winston in private, and if Winston remains all in on Dirk Cutter, how much of an impact will that have on the Glazers?
40%.
Steve, could that be enough in and of itself to keep Cutter on this job? If he has the full support of Jameis Winston in a private conversation where Winston feels he can speak his piece?
Well, right before Steve answers, I got to add, the Glazers got to be careful here. Jameis, I could play when he probably should have been on the bench.
Yeah. That's different, though. It's different. It's a different question.
It's different, but if you know, a 24-year-old guy, is he going to be thoroughly honest and say, yeah, Cutter's the guy, or Cutter's not the guy? I mean, you got to be careful
with
that.
But, Steve, we've all said the biggest reason Cutter's got the job is his relationship with Winston.
You could argue the only reason.
So when you have that, and the end of the season, if Winston throws his full support to Cutter, are the Glazers going to make a change?
The Glazers cannot run this franchise successfully listening to Jameis Winston's opinion on support of a coach. They can't do that. That's not how you run a team. If Jameis says, hey...
As important as Winston is to the future of this franchise?
If Jameis says he has a problem with the coach, then that's different. But Jameis giving his support to Cutter, that can't be a factor. I mean, if he said, look, we got a problem. Yeah, I don't like coach. And he said this to me and this, and I don't trust the guy. That's different. But if he says, I love Coach Cutter, that can't make a difference. It just can't. You can't run a team that way. I mean, there have been a lot of great quarterbacks in this league, history of this league, who've had many, many coaches. Of them, but enough of them where, hey, you gotta. There's more than just playing quarterback.
So at that point, you're saying the Glazers could say to themselves, Winston will flourish with another guy. So it's not going to guarantee that Cutter returns.
I mean, look, didn't help him? Didn't help Lovey. That's probably the best thing Lovey did was groom Jameis, keep him level, help him get into the league. A lot of respect there.
Who knows what Winston said about Lovey Smith behind closed doors? Who knows? Who knows?
We don't. No. I find that, but he seemed to be very. All right, Ira, let's run through the predictions real quick. Sunday, Bucks hosting the Jets. The homecoming, A.S. Jack Wagon and Josh McClown.
The homecoming game.
All right, who's going first?
Give me a score, Kaufman.
Lee, at this point, I don't have any faith in the home team. I just don't have any faith in them. The Jets are a very competitive football team. The last time I looked, they're a game and a half out of a wild card spot. They're in every game, Lee. They never get blown out, and they win their share. They could be 500 by Sunday night. 500 for a team that was supposed to tank. That coach is doing a marvelous job. Here comes McCown. Here comes ASJ. The way the Bucks are playing, no Winston. I don't have any reason to think Fitzpatrick's going to light things up. No Evans. I got to go with the visitors. I got to go with the visitors.
Score?
23-16, Jets.
Todd Bowles saved his job because he got new assistants. Think about that. Because people were screaming for his head, and he got new assistants. Look what happened. I think it's going to be low scoring. Because McCown is McCown. I don't care, Steve. We respect Steve Dooming a lot, and Steve Dooming is a big fan of Josh McCown's. I'm sorry, Steve. Josh McCown's Josh McCown. It's going to be low scoring. Again, no Jameis, no Mike Evans. And the Bucs defense plays good at home, but I have no faith in this team anymore. I suggest it will be Jets 13, Bucs 9.
I'm going to go 24-20 Jets. I don't see how the Bucs are going to stop this
offense. This is the Joe Bucks fan podcast over here.
Well, what are you going to do? It's their own fault. You know, I hate doing that, but I don't see any reason why the defense is going to slow this. The Jets run the ball well. McCown scrambles well. They surely don't play a mobile quarterback very well. He's hitting 70%+ of his passes against the whole league. What are you going to do against the Bucks?
Jet defense has been better than the Bucks.
They've got receivers. The ASJ is probably going to. I mean, as nut jobbish as he is, I'm sure he's going to be so dialed into this game. And what I'm hoping, it's just a personal hope, and while I'd love to see the Bucks win, ASJ, I believe now he can do the celebration, that Captain Morgan celebration, legally. right, within the rules, so he could duplicate that, and I think that would be great fun. All right, last thing, Ira, because we do have to shuffle out. The Bucks, I can hear Ed Glazer pounding on the door. We got to get out of here. Yes. Hall of Fame, you got a yes. date coming up? What's
going
on?
I asked one of the honchos at the Hall of Fame, when will we have the announcement of the list of 25 semifinalists? Let's remember that years and years ago, in John Lynch's first year of eligibility, he did not make the 25. He didn't make it. This is a referendum on Simeon Rice, I believe. By the way, the date is November 21st. It'll be a week.
Week of Thanksgiving?
It'll be a week from next Tuesday.
Okay.
Yeah, the week of Thanksgiving. It'll be on a Tuesday. I'm sure they'll have that TV show, that hour special. I got to listen to that clown, Michael Silva, weigh in on all 25 guys.
And that's where they narrow the field down.
The field will be narrowed to 25.
Simeon Rice has
God forbid they don't put Rondé Barber on that list. I will go off. There's no question about it.
Simeon's never made that, correct?
Simeon has never made that. And, of course, this is Rondé's first year, so he's never going to make that before this year. I'm telling you, this Rondé Barber thing's got me a little worried because, you know, a couple of guys said, who's Rondé Barber? Now, that's a chilling line.
Including Prickly Pete Prisco, right?
Prisco might have said that. You know, he's all in on his offensive lineman that played 5 years for the Jaguars. Who was excellent. And maybe Terrell Davis opens the door to a Bocelli because now you can have a short career and get in. November 21st. We'll have much to discuss. It'll be a nighttime announcement. I'll get it a little bit early. They send it to the selectors a little bit early. I expect John Lynch, of course, Rondé Barber, and Simeon Rice all to be on that list. There'll be one more cut down to 15, which would be in December or early January.
And 15 means you get
in the room,
and
those 15
right?
get in the room.
All right, fun stuff, Sage. We will see you Sunday on Fox 13, Scott Smith's Tailgate Sunday.
Live on the field. Live on the field.
10:30. Fans, of course, are free to arrive early and heckle you.
I might trip ASJ as he goes wandering by, but you never know.
And, of course, your podcast, everybody knows how to find that. You're on Sirius XM Mad Dog Radio.
I'm also on Spectrum Sports 360.
Mad Dog Wednesday at 5, Spectrum, Bay News 9.
Monday and Friday.
Bay News 9, Monday and Friday.
Both of you guys, real quick question. Percentage, Jets, Bucks, fans. I say 65% Jets.
Wow. I'll say 65% Bucks.
Jets fans as a group are not very energized, understandably so, even though they've done pretty well. So I'm going to say they probably have 50-50 split,
but
not a lot of passion either way. It's the Jets. Come on.
We will meet again Sunday evening, right?
Yes.
That's right.
All right, Ari, get out of here. Enough with the meetings.